Good morning, everyone. We're reading in Book 2, the Book of the Traveler of the Worlds, Canto 5, the Godheads of the Little Life. And we did our study up to the break on page 163, but then we went on reading. I think we stopped on page 170. So I think it will be good to continue our reading from line 684 on page 170. We'll read to the end of the canto, and then we'll go back to this break on page 163 and do our more detailed study. So page 170, line 685, we'll start reading. Will you begin, Patricia?
What are the first words?
A work is done. You'll have to project your voice because these fans are making much noise.
A work is done in the deep silence, a glory and wonder of spiritual sense, a laughter and beauty of everlasting space, transforming world experience into joy. Inhabit the mystery of the untouched gods, lulled by time's beats, eternity sleeps in us. In the sealed hermetic heart, the happy core, unmoved behind this outer shape of death, the eternal entity prepares within its matter of divine felicity, its reign of heavenly phenomena. Even in our skeptic mind of ignorance, a foresight comes of some immense relief. Our will lifts towards it, slow and shaping hands. Each part in us desires its absolute. Our thoughts covet the everlasting light. Our strength derives from an omnipotent force, and since from a veiled God joy the worlds were made, and since eternal beauty asks for form, even here, where all is made of being's dust, our hearts are captured by ensnaring shapes. Our very senses blindly seek for bliss.
Thank you. Tuan.
Our error crucifies reality to force its birth and divine body here, compelling incarnate in human form and weeping in limbs that one can touch its lesson, its knowledge to rescue an ancient ignorance, its savior light the impersonal universe. And when the greater self comes, seen like dark, to fill this image our transience, all shall be captured by divine, transformed in waves of undreamed ecstasy, shall roll our mind, life, sense, in love, in a light, other than this heart, limited human day. The body's tissues thrill, apotheosized. Its cells sustain bright metamorphosis. This little being of time, the shadow soul, this living dwarf figurehead of darkened spirit, out of its strapped and petty green shell house, its shape of person and its eager face, divested of this mortal travesty, like a clay troll kneaded into a rock, new made in the image of eternal rest. It shall be caught to the rest of a white force, and flaming with the paradise of touch, in a rose fire of sweet spiritual grace, in the red passion of its infinite change, wave and shudder with ecstasy.
Thank you. Patty.
In the red passion?
Yes. Next line, as if reversing.
Which line again, Charlie?
732.
Quiver?
No, as if.
Next line, as if reversing.
Servitude to the dim abyss, it shall learn at last who lived within surprised the animal with the occult god, then kindling the gold tongue of sacrifice, calling the powers of a bright hemisphere, we shall shed the discredit of our mortal state, make the abysm a road for heaven's descent, acquaint our depths with the supernal ray, and cleave the darkness with the mystic fire.
Mm, thank you. Francis? Unguided, unguided. So we can turn back to page 163 at the break. Sri Aurobindo has described to us the elemental entities who are manipulating our consciousness without our awareness, getting hold of our life mind, our life impulses, and doing all kinds of mischief there without us being aware of them. And wherever love and light and largeness act, lack, where those things are missing, these little beings do their mischief. They, again, their stuff, their very substance rebels against all higher truth. But they have to obey a stronger will. So Mother and Sri Aurobindo were able to control those beings by their will power. But mostly we are not aware of them at all. These are, he describes them like theater people, you know, directors and screen painters, scene painters, these nimble scene shifters. They are always moving around the scenery of our lives. They're always busy with that ill-lit scene. There's not much light in that realm of the lower mind, the little life. And we ourselves, we are incapable of building our fate. We are not aware enough. We are moved around by them as actors. We speak and strut our parts, the parts that they teach to us, until the piece is done, the drama that we participate in. And then we pass off, fortunately, into a brighter time and subtler space. And this is how they are inflicting their little law on human beings, curbing, holding back the mounting, slow uprise of man, of humanity. And then his too scanty walk, that little short lifetime that we are given, they close it with death. That's the end of our scene for the time being. Turiya.
This is the ephemeral creature's daily life.
if new designs, if richer details grow, and more tight and more complete pairs, if little by little it wears a larger face, still, even in man, the blood is lean and poor. The gross content holds his foreign state. His small successes are failures of the soul. His little pleasures punctuate frequent creaks. Hardship and toil are the heavy price he pays for the right to live, and his last wages death.
Thank you. Can you speak up, please?
Yeah, sure. There's one sentence which I have thought to use the same. His small successes are failures of the soul.
No, you don't get it.
I don't get it.
No, when you succeed in doing something, you've put a lot of effort into it, then you get success. It happens. Wow, I'm so great. I did it. So Sri Aurobindo tells us it's often much more to the benefit of the soul if we fail in our human efforts. If to succeed may be a failure of the soul, because the soul needs always to progress more and more, and a little surface success may be a real obstacle in the way for a long time. Well, it is a kind of ironic statement, of course. Yes, yes. Sri Aurobindo's irony, but he's telling us something we can observe also. So the ephemeral creature's daily life. This is as long as we are human animals. I hope that all of us have risen a little bit beyond that. We are not just human animals. Of course, we have to live with this animal body, but we may not have to be confined to this level of the lower life consciousness, the animal consciousness that only cares about survival and comfort and ease. As long as it's like that, this dense, heavy, lower nature is screening the soul. The soul is there, but it can't express itself much in the outer activity of the being. And even when intellect has developed, as long as the intellect's outward gazing sight is looking only outwards and at the surface of things, and is only concerned about earthy interest, what is good in a material way, and creature joys, animal enjoyments. As long as it's like that, an incurable littleness pursues his days. Because ever since consciousness was born on earth, life is the same in insect, ape, and man. That consciousness is there. Its stuff is unchanged, and it just follows the ordinary common route. There are new developments, new designs, richer, more complex details grow, thought is added, and with it more tangled cares, more things to worry about. It also, he says, may wear a brighter face, in man. Still, even in man, in humanity, the plot of our drama is mean and poor, very limited. Is that where we stopped? I think so.
We went further.
We went further. So a gross content. We're just contented with comfort and little satisfactions, no? So. And that prolongs our fallen state. If we suffer, it may help us to progress, but this creature satisfaction doesn't help us to progress. It just prolongs this the continuation of this littleness. So that's where it says, his small successes. And I think, wow, yes, I made it. These are failures of the soul. we get some little pleasures, but they're punctuating frequent griefs, many things to be distressed about. Hardship and toil are the heavy price the human animal pays for the right to live. And his last payment is death. That's where we stopped.
Wages? His last wages? What does wages mean here?
Our payment, no?
Payment,
yes. Yes. You work hard all your life, and then at last, yes, you can take a rest. That's how you get paid. There's that French film, no? The wages of fear. You remember? The wages of fear is death. In the Bible it says the wages of sin is death. But here just the act of being human, what it gets paid for, paid in the end, is death. Karen, you read?
An inertia sung towards inconscient, sleep that imitates death is his repose. Puny splendor of creative force is made his spur to fragile human works, which yet outlast their brief creator's breath. He dreams sometimes of the revels of the gods, and sees the Dionysian gesture pass, a leonine greatness that will tear his soul, if through his fading limbs and fainting heart the sweet and joyful mighty madness swept. Trivial amusements stimulate and waste the energy given to him to grow, and his little hour is spent in little things.
Let's pause there. His little hour is spent in little things. Yes, please. It means your brief lifetime. You have a little time, a short time, and we spend it with trivialities. These first two lines, an inertia sunk towards inconscience, a sleep that imitates death is his repose. We speak of sleep as death's brother. It reminds me of a wonderful book written by one of the teachers in the ashram, Jugal Kishore Mukherjee. He's written a wonderful book. It's really worth looking at if you can find a copy. It's called The Destiny of the Body. And he examines this state of animal humanity and analyzes it so wonderfully. You know, what is animal in us and what are the higher possibilities, even for the body? And one of the things he points out is our need to eat and our need to sleep. These are animal characteristics that we're all affected by all the time, and it's very difficult to overcome them. So this sleep, even our sleep, it is possible to train the sleep to be conscious. It's one of the things the mother has spoken about often. But normally we're just instinctive animals. We fall asleep. It's good for us. But it's just an imitation of death. Then we start again. We are driven by some creative force, but it's not very strong. It's a splendor of creative force, but it's puny. It is also limited. But that is our spur. That's what drives us to human achievements. Human beings do surprising things. But these human works are fragile, not very, very durable, but often they outlast the lifetime of the individual or individuals who have achieved them. They outlast their brief creator's breath. Occasionally, we human beings, some dream of the revels of the gods, the delights of the gods, some kind of dream comes into our consciousness. It says he sees the Dionysian gesture pass. Dionysus is the Greek god of wine. He's brought us the grapes and the joy that the wine brings, the divine intoxication. I'm always puzzled by this line, the Dionysian gesture in this line. I don't know, is there a In French, the word geste, does it have the idea of some kind of revelry or, yeah? It's French, I think, huh? Yes. This doesn't appear in this sense in any English dictionary, but I think it is that, you know, we see Bacchus and Dionysus, it's a procession of celebrating people delighting, or creatures delighting. You have anything to add, Jean-Yves? No? I can understand it like that.
There is la geste in the medieval times, it yeah. was this epic text, it seems to me to
be yeah.
but not what you are saying.
Les chansons de geste. In this sense, what does it mean exactly? A kind of contest or...
Yeah. It's a kind of epic text.
Here it's not a text he's talking about, no? It's a revelry, it's a party or a pageant or something is happening, which we see depicted in art, in medieval art, Renaissance art, these processions of Bacchus with his followers. Anyway, the idea is of some uplifted state and perhaps a procession or an action or a presentation, something like that. He sees them passing. He's just a spectator. And that, what he sees passing, that Dionysian gesture, is like a lion, a leonine greatness. It's something so powerful that it would tear his soul if it actually entered in to his body, to his failing limbs and fainting heart, this sweet and joyful, mighty madness. Sweat. So it's some intensely passionate experience. Yes, Sebastian. Leonine. Leonine has to do with lions. So lions are the most powerful beasts, no? They roar. It's something that would be difficult for a human body to. Well, whether you realize it or not, Shobendo's saying it's like that. We get glimpses of that kind of emotional intensity. You glimpse it, but we wouldn't be able to bear it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is the word madness related to the
I think so, yes. You're out of your mind. You know? And then you read a little further, no, about the trivial amusements. They stimulate us and waste. They stimulate our energy, they also waste the energy. The energy that's really given to us to progress, to be truly ourselves. So at this lower life level, we spend our little hour, our brief lifetime in little things. And then he describes some of these little things. Sitting next to Turia, I don't know your name. Sorry?
Monica,
please read.
A brief companionship with managers, a little love and jealousy and hate, a touch of friendship with indifferent crows, draw his heart plan on life's diminutive map. If something great awakes, to fray his speech, to reveal his zenith, tension of delight, he sought to eternize. Ephemeral soul, art's beauty, brilliant wing, is a pastime for exams. A thrill that smites the nerves is music's spell. Amidst his past toil and welter of cares, grasped by the labor of his growing thoughts, he draws sometimes around his aging globe. Measures come, mighty hands to heal his life pain. He saved by her silence from his wrath of self. In her tranquil beauty is his purest bliss.
Thank you. A brief companionship with many jars. Jars, you know, it's when the door bangs. It's a little bit open and it bangs. And it doesn't close, it bangs again. It makes such an irritating noise. The door is ajar, jarring, something that's discordant, unpleasant to hear. So we may have a brief companionship which brings a lot of support and happiness, but it's also full of these moments of disharmony. There's a little love, there's also jealousy and hate. Amidst the indifferent crowds of humanity, there may come a touch of true friendship. So these are the things that map out a lifetime's experience, on life's diminutive map. Such a small, limited area is given of experience. And if something greater wakes up in the consciousness, for the ordinary human being, he's just not, he doesn't have the range of expression to be able to give expression to that zenith tension of delight, the very highest possibility of bliss. No? It's not only difficult to catch, it means that our stuff, our capacities, it's not enough to give expression what could be expressed. No? As long as we're in this little life stage, that we can't really... We may be touched for a moment by something much more intense, but then that's it. Can't reveal. It's zenith tension at the highest point of delight. And his thought that the poets may try to give a lasting expression to such a moment, but it's the moment is only ephemeral anyway, and our thought is too limited to really give expression to that. Art, that's what art would be, you know, giving expression to these moments of higher consciousness. But we don't take art really very seriously. Art's brilliant gleam, it's just pastime for the eyes. We don't see what a higher possibility it offers. Music, if Don were here, you know, music is so important to him, but it's just a thrill that smites the nerves. It's that spell of music. It's also passing. Perhaps much more nourishing for many people is the experience in nature, in the midst of all our harassed toil, all the things disagreeable things we have to cope with all the time, this welter of cares, as if we're just overwhelmed by anxieties. The bother of these laboring thoughts going on and on and on in the mind. How can we get relief from that? One of the best ways is to go out into nature. He draws sometimes around his aching brow nature's calm, mighty hands to heal his life pain. And sometimes people really do have peak experiences, some sense of release into a higher consciousness through a contact with nature. He may be saved by her silence from his rack of self. A rack is a terrible instrument of torture which keeps you continually in tension and pain. The silence of nature saves us from ourselves. In her tranquil beauty is his purest bliss. I'm sorry, Mum, I don't know your name. You? Hmm? Yeah. What is your name?
Jani.
Jani. A new life dawns.
A new life dawns. He looks out from Vista's heart. The spirit's breath moves him, but soon retires. His strength was not made to hold that prison guest, all goes down with convention and routine or fierce excitement, brings him vivid joys. His days are tinged with the red hue of strife, and lust's hot glare and passion's crimson stain. Battle and murder are his tribal game. Time, as he long to turn his eyes within and look for his lost self and his dead soul. His motion on two short and anxious wings, he cannot soar but creeps on his long road, or if impatient of the church of time, he will make his planet haste or face its long road. His heart that runs soon pants and tunnels and sinks, or he walks ever on and finds no end.
Thank you. So at this level of development, these new impulses may come, no? The dawn of a new life, new prospects, much wider prospects, even be moved by the breath of the Spirit, but only for a little while. It soon withdraws. Our human strength was not made to hold for a longer time or permanently that powerful guest, the Spirit. So after that brief uplift, everything dulls down to the usual way. We have a recording of Mother speaking about this process, how, you know, the dawn light comes and everything's filled with higher possibilities, and then it sinks back to the dull, ordinary, usual way, she says, with such disgust in her voice. It's unforgettable. Convention and routine. So those who are not satisfied, cannot be satisfied with convention and routine, they go for thrills, fierce excitement, bringing vivid joys. And then the human being's days get tinged with red, the red hue of strife, of conflict and quarrel, and lust's hot glare, and passion's crimson stain, all these vivid joys. Battle and murder are the tribal game of human beings. The individual has no time to turn his eyes within, look for his lost self, his dead soul.
How it can be dead soul? It can be sleeping soul.
It's as if it's dead. It can be reborn, it's immortal. No, it can wake up again, as long as it's not functioning, not alive. His motion on too short an axis wheels. It means it can only go in a small circle, I think. What's the idea here about the axis, axle being so short? Axis, something like that, small circles. And he can't soar up like a great bird or an angel. He has to creep, move slowly on this long road. And if it happens that he becomes impatient with that, that there wakes up some will and aspiration to progress more quickly, he wants to quickly move forward on this slow road of fate and evolution, that heart which gives him that swift impetus and runs and moves quickly, it soon gets tired, gets short of breath, panting, gets tired, sinks, it can't keep running forever. And he may not even try that. He just keeps on trudging along, walking on, and never finds an end to the journey. Is it Mochi? Would you read? Hardly a few, line 520.
Scanty grace is his grace. king was formed to play a pivotal part in the world of our mind and its active stage. And now God gives us his kind of life, being the white face of the starry past.
Thank you. Anything to ask or share or comment? This is the little life. Hardly a few can rise to greater life. And the next canto will be about the kingdom and Godheads of the greater life. Here we are still in the little life. And Sri Aurobindo tells us that there is a divine bliss, the Ananda. It's sleeping in everything. It wants to wake up. But into us at the level of the lower life, it just it breaks out as a small joy of life, a kind of contentment or happiness or gleam of delight. And that's what keeps us going, the fact that that little joy of life is there. That's lightening the burden, all the things that go wrong. That's what reconciles us, makes us willing to accept our little world, our little life. Gives a certain satisfaction. We're satisfied with the common average kind, tomorrow's hopes, the old familiar rounds of thought, familiar interests and desires. And all these things that make us content with our life as it is, it's like a thick, thorny hedge which is protecting us in a way from the vastness of the infinitudes, and which is holding our kinship, our close connection with infinity. It's keeping it hidden, shut away from us into our inmost self, where we can't even find it anymore. The greatness of hidden God that's cut off from us. So this being of the little life, at the little life level of human evolution, Sri Aurobindo says, this being was formed to play a trivial part, a small, not very important part, in a little drama on a petty stage, not very significant and meaningful. And it's as if the soul at this stage has pitched his tent of life. There's one of the paintings made by the mother with Huta. This narrow plot, the little tent of life, our permanent dwelling place beneath the wide gaze of the starry vast. The whole universe is looking down on us, but here we are in our little tents, sleeping. And it can appear, it sometimes seems, as if this is the crown of all that has been done. This is what evolution has led to, people like us. He is the crown of all that has been done, all these eons of development. No? This is creation, thus is creation's labor justified. This is the world's result, nature's last poise. I remember what a wonderful moment of awakening it was for me when I first heard about Sri Aurobindo, and there was the suggestion that evolution is not finished, that this is not the crown of all that has been done, and there are higher possibilities. No? Because if this were all and nothing more were meant, if what now seems were the whole of what must be, if this were not just a stage through which we are passing on our road from matter to eternal light, to eternal self, to the light that made the worlds, the cause of things, if it were not like that, if evolution were really finished, our mind's limited view could well interpret existence, our existence here, as just an accident in time, something that's happened just like that without any purpose or meaning, an illusion or a phenomenon or a freak. Well, I've read ahead, but for me these are such meaningful line so important. We should never think that this is the crown of all that has been done. So much greater possibilities lie in front. Do you like to read? Eyes closed. Lila. Yes. So, why don't you start at line 543? And if this were all...
This were all, and nothing more were meant, if what now seems were the whole of what must be, if this were not the state through which we pass, on our road, projected by the myself, the light that made the words, the cause of things, where the mountains of feet, our minds linked to view, existence as an accident in time, illusion of the minority, the paradox of the creative thought, which moves between unreal opposites, inanimate force striving to feel and know, matter that changed to lead itself by mind, intransient,
shall we look at that sentence? If this little life were all, and if nothing more were meant, were intended, if what now seems, what we see now, were the whole of what must be, if there were no higher possibilities, if this life that we experience now were not just a stage through which we are passing on to something else, we're passing further on our road from matter. Okay, we've evolved up from matter, stardust formed in suns, but there's a road we are following which will lead us to back to our eternal self, back to the light, the consciousness, which has made all these worlds, which is the real cause of things. If it weren't like that, well, our mind would be quite right in, or justified in, looking around at the world and saying that our conscious existence is just an accident. Or maybe it's not even an accident, it's just an illusion, that we don't exist. Or it's some kind of a freak event, doesn't fit in, an anomaly somewhere.
In the sentence, if this were not a stage through which we pass, is that meant to be if this were not a stage?
Well, stage is another word. The old Roman roads were divided into stadia, no? Into stages. It's a measurement, I think, of distance. You pass from one stage to another. Yes. Can you speak a little louder?
If it comes up for me, is that better than just is that movement? Is the only everything
is moving. Actually, everything's moving, yeah.
More and more. I had an experience with a couple of psychedelics. Everything was connected. I mean, it had its own kind of, it's like a painting by that.
Yes. Yes. It is what?
Taking us.
Taking us, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yes. That's how the Isha Upanishad starts. It says, all this is a habitation for the Lord, for the cause of things. Everything that moves in this moving universe, it's all Him, and we can enjoy it by not holding on to it, by letting it be, and by not wanting to hold on to it, not craving anything. And in that way, we can move, we can live and act in this universe of movement without being bound by the consequences of our action, so long as we know that it's all Him that's moving. And in that way, we can wish to live for 100 years, going on, moving, doing, enjoying, and not have to fear anything. That's how it, sorry. Why does the Upanishad say Him? You would have to ask the Rishi. It's just a way of saying, no, Him, the Lord, the One, the cause. Here he says, the cause of. Yes. I don't know. It must have depended actually on the experience of that particular Rishi that he chose this way of saying it. But that's what I always remember, this universe of movement in which everything is moving. All of it, the Lord is living within it. The cause, the truth of it all is living within it. And we too, we can experience that. We can enjoy all this by not trying to hold on to it, letting it be.
In other words, total detachment?
No, it says enjoyment, actually. By this renounced, that means you don't claim it for yourself. Enjoy it. You're allowed to enjoy it. Living thus, doing thus works in the world, being active in the world. You should wish to live 100 years. That way, it, then he says, it is within you and not otherwise, like this. This way you don't need to fear going into any dark worlds. You'll be able to see that everything fits together, as Lorraine said. So it's a very wonderful and reassuring message. Well, it's like freakily, you know, that's the idea. That how come it's absolutely abnormal here that matter is giving birth to soul? How could it possibly happen? Let me find the line. Which line is it exactly? Inconscience. Yes. So if everything is unconscious, if the whole universe is unconscious, where has this phenomenon, illusion, this thing, conscious part of us that we experience as soul, where has it come from? Something freaky, abnormal, monstrous. Is that where we stopped? Engendering soul. Yeah. Perhaps we could stop there for today.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.